Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we are getting an update on the Garment Worker Protection Act, or California Senate Bill 1399. It would guarantee the state's minimum wage for garment workers. We did a brief segment about this last week and decided to dedicate the entire show to this today because a lot of people do not know that Los Angeles has the highest concentration of garment workers in the country, according to the Garment Worker Center. They say that more than 45,000 people, mostly immigrant women, work 10 to 12 hours a day and make as little as $150 a week. And they are making clothing for some of the world's top brands. We're talking about Forever 21, Ross, TJ Maxx, Nordstrom, Macy's, Burlington. We actually reached out to all of these companies. Only two got back to us, TJ Maxx and Ross, and I'm sorry, Fashion Nova and Ross. It's a very long list, and we will read you their statements during today's show. About 2,000 manufacturers in LA employ garment workers. According to the California Labor Federation, Angelenos lose about $26 million a week in paid wages. More than 20 years ago, the California legislature created the Garment Restitution Fund to ensure that garment workers whose wages were stolen were made whole. But advocates at the center say companies are still exploiting a loophole and they need to be held accountable. Joining us again is Marissa Nuncio, director of the Garment Worker Center, which she joined in February of 2013. Marissa became aware of workers' struggles growing up in Magnolia Park, the oldest Mexican community in Houston, Texas. In 2001, she joined Sweatshop Watch, a co-founding organization of the Garment Worker Center, where her role was to support the newly established center and its first campaigns. Hi, Marissa. Thanks for joining us again.
Hi. Hello. Good morning, and thank you for having me again.
We're also joined today by Francisco, who is a garment worker in Los Angeles. Hi, Francisco. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, we really appreciate it. Thank you. Marissa, let's start off by getting an update. We had you on last week, and SB 1399 was in committee. It is now moving to a full Senate vote today. Can you just give us an update? Where is the bill, and what kind of support have you seen from senators so far?
Sure. Yes. The last time we spoke, we were in the Appropriations Committee of the Senate. And we passed out of appropriations and are on the full Senate floor this week. So our bill will be brought up for a full vote this week. You know, it's been, we're feeling really optimistic and hopeful. You know, our members and our sponsor coalition and our allies have put in a lot of work in getting the word out on this bill. Tons of sort of pounding the pavement, you know, virtually during these COVID times, but getting the word out. We've had a lot of positive response. We have a really broad sort of spectrum of support from labor to, you know, women's organizations to, you know, faith-based organizations that are supporting this bill. And, you know, we were really excited to get the support of the Women's Caucus. So, you know, that's where we are at this moment. I think, you know, given all of that, we're feeling pretty positive going into this vote.
And Francisco, you are a garment worker in Los Angeles. Thank you for joining us. Because a lot of people, I don't think, in fact, I got a couple of emails in response to last week's shows. A lot of people do not realize that so many workers, about 45,000, are sewing clothing in Los Angeles. A lot of people assume that most of the work has been outsourced for even lower wages, which we can talk about later. But when did you start working in this industry?
Well, actually, I have been working for a while, but I started to work in downtown LA. I started on the 10, 12, And then I realized that the problems and the difficulties are really are worse than I thought. And the way people have been treated, the salaries are low. I mean, I've seen all these stories with my own eyes, and it makes me really, I don't know, it just makes me really sad to see how many people are suffering for this low, very low salaries and the mistreated in the way they, you know, they have been working for years.
Francisco, you don't have to name the brand if you don't want to, but do you sew clothing for major clothing brands that most people would be familiar with?
Yeah, basically, I have been working for so many that I don't remember exactly, but I remember one called Fashion Nova, Toto, it's like an, I don't know what language it's called, T-O-T-T-O-T-O. There is another brand, but I don't exactly remember right now. But I have been working for quite a few brands that I don't know if they, you know, because the owners, I mean, they said that the companies are not paying very well. That's why they're not paying, you know, not even the minimum wage.
What do you do for these brands, Francisco? Can you just describe a typical day at work?
I'm sorry. What was that again?
Can you describe what a typical work day is like?
Oh, yes, definitely. you will be surprised that we work from 7 a.m. Some people work from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., like Monday to Friday. Sometimes we work Saturdays. Normally, people work Saturdays like from 7 to 12, 30 to 1. And all of that work on the weekend, sometimes I've seen and so many places where people work all day long on Saturday and they work like half a day on Sunday. And they get very low salary, like $300 a week.
And what is the work exactly? You're sewing clothing?
I'm losing you. I'm sorry. I didn't hear the question.
Oh, that's okay. So are you? What is your work exactly? Are you sewing clothing, putting zippers in, that kind of thing?
We do basically everything from blouses to T-shirts, shirts. Well, most of the time, that I've been working, for ladies, clothing, like any kind, like pants, shorts, almost everything.
And can you talk about the hiring process, Francisco? Because I'll read the emails we got back from Ross and Fashion Nova, but they, like other brands, basically wash their hands of this problem, saying that they hire a middleman. So you're not directly working for Fashion Nova, but you're working for another factory that contracts out through Fashion Nova. So can you tell us, what is the process like when you actually get these jobs? Again, you don't have to name names, but you know, when you sign the dotted line, what does the contract say?
Well, actually, there is no contract, and this is the interesting part of it, because it's some kind of tricky, because the contractor tells us, you know, there is work here, you know, if you want to work, you can get paid, and this is the price we pay. We're not asking for most of the places, they are not asking for any ID at all. We don't, you know, we don't have the, because some other places we have those, you know, those machines and where we can actually sign in, but there is nothing at all, nothing. Most of the clothing factories in downtown LA for now, for the COVID-19, it's amazing to know that some of them don't even have sanitizers. they don't have you know, they're supposed to have those regulations that the government is asking, such as cleaning the machines very well, just in case, cleaning your hands, but they don't have any, so most of these clothing factories at this moment, they do not perform those instructions.
So there's no hand sanitizer. Are they handing out masks and gloves?
We use our own. Mm. We use our own. I use my own. Everybody uses our eye mask, our own equipment, because they do not provide that. You will be amazed to know that. I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry to say this, but they don't really care about, you know, our health. They don't care about that. It seems like what they care is just, you know, making money out of our work, a very low paid work, and they don't really care about that.
Francisco, what happens if you complain about this? You know, working 12 hours a day and making so little wages in a state like California, I'm sure people are wondering, how is this even legal? What happens if you complain? Is there any way for you to speak out, or what, you know, can you just talk about that?
Oh, definitely. And once again, I really appreciate the time there you guys are giving me, and then I would like to remark something very important. Somebody at the Garment Worker Center just told me that sometimes my voice and my demands sound powerful. And do you know why is that? This is because this is a voice of thousands of workers, the clothing factories, you know, who are screaming out to demand equality and fair salaries. They are tired. We are tired for being mistreated, oppressed, and intimidated for the factory owners. And they have been operated like that for decades. Fortunately, we have the support for the Garment Worker Centers, and they are working really hard to make things different, to have some changes about our situation. Because this is a terrible story, let me tell you. And thank you for you guys for trying to say the world that here in Los Angeles, it's not even Asia, it's not even Latin America, where there is, where, you know, a lot of people have been mistreated, and we have been enduring that for many, many, many years.
Mm. Marissa, what happens if Francisco and other garment workers speak out and demand higher wages and better working conditions?
Normally what they do is they try, they try to intimidate people, saying that if you say something about what is going on here, you could have problems with the law. Very, very quick. I'm going to tell you a very quick story. It takes seconds. There is one guy who was trying to complain about his salary, and the lady, the owner of the factory, you know, that happens, you know, I was working on that factory, and said, well, this is how we pay here. And if you do not agree, you know, if you are trying to do something or whatever you want to say, if you don't want to leave, I'm going to call the police. The guy felt intimidated and he left, and he didn't get the salary that was, you know, he deserved. So And this is just one story. And what I'm telling you is my story, but this is a story of so many people. And this is happening every single weekend when people are going to get the money. And I've seen ladies crying. I've seen ladies crying because the low amount of money they get is not enough to support themselves. I have a problem right now because with the money I'm taking, I'm working at a clothing factory, and the money I'm taking is enough to pay, you know, for the rent. If I work a month, but I won't have money to pay for food because I make like $300 a week, and the $1,200 is enough to pay the rent. Which I don't have, which I don't have a place to live right now, because the problem is that I'm not only working here in this factory, but I'm a survivor of the COVID-19, and I'm very fortunate that I'm still here with you guys telling you my story.
Oh, wow, Francisco, you had COVID-19?
I tested positive. I spent 10 days at the hospital. The first days when I started to feel the symptoms, believe me, I thought that was the last days of my life because I almost died. Literally, I'm telling you very quick, I'm telling you the story. It's such a big story. I know that you guys sometimes don't have time in the radio and all of that, and I respect that. But just really quick, that's what I'm saying. And the reason why that happened is because the place that we were working at was where nobody was practicing the social distances, and all of that situation that's come, it just comes up when this terrible problem appeared on all around the world, because it's not only the United States.
Francisco, your factory has been open throughout the entire COVID crisis, or did it close?
They are still working, but they are sending people to have the test. Fortunately, what I've heard, because I haven't been there, I don't know. So according to, because I have friends still working there, and they say that those who are tested negative are still working. And some of those who are tested positive, which are not that much, there are very few of them, and they stay at home. And as soon as they prove they tested negative, so they can go and return back to work. But this is only one or two clothing factories that I'm talking about. If you, most of the small clothing factories in downtown LA, they are not practicing those instructions.
Francisco, can you stay with us for a little while longer?
I will be glad to.
Great. Thank you. Francisco is a garment worker in Los Angeles, working 12-hour days, making $300 a week. And as you just heard, he tested positive for COVID. And luckily, Francisco, we're so glad that you recovered and that you're here with us telling your story. We're also joined by Marissa Nuncio, director of the Garment Worker Center in L.A. Today in California, politicians will be voting on Senate Bill 1399, which would guarantee the state's minimum wage for garment workers. Right now, they are paid per piece, and that is why people like Francisco make such little wages, $300 a week. LA's guaranteed minimum wage right now is $14.25 an hour. You know, it's very rare to hear from garment workers. So many people have assumed that they've all been outsourced, because in places like Bangladesh, Vietnam, Turkey, you name it, Jordan, people are paid far, lower wages. And so a lot of people don't realize that there are 45,000 garment workers in Los Angeles. They make between $150 to $300 a month. And so today we're getting their stories. We're talking about this bill. If you have any questions for our guests, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Marissa, I'm so glad that you connected us with Francisco, because it's so important to hear from, you know, workers. It's just very rare to hear from garment workers. Can you just give us an update in terms of COVID cases? With the 2,000 factories in Los Angeles, have they mostly stayed open? And do you know if they've had major outbreaks?
Sure. Yeah, we've seen quite a mix of sort of realities since the pandemic. When Los Angeles issued a safer at home order and closed non-essential businesses, garment production, apparel production, was considered non-essential. And so we did see a lot of closures and a tremendous amount of workers unemployed. But we also saw pretty quickly a shift to what's called PPE, or personal protective equipment, like face masks and medical scrubs, medical gowns. We saw a shift to producing that. And sort of, it increased over the weeks as the pandemic went on, and that was allowed as essential business. And in fact, the city, you know, created a program for it as well. What we've seen in these factories, and what we know from our members, like Francisco, you know, and he's one of many. And his story, unfortunately, is all too common. And what we've heard from workers is that actually wages went down even more. Workers are by and large paid on a piece rate. We heard that workers were earning even lower piece rates. And we heard a lot from workers about the lack of social distancing in the factories, not being provided masks. A lot of these the reality is these factories were not healthy, safe environments prior to the pandemic. And the pandemic only intensified and exacerbated those conditions. And so if you have a factory that was never well ventilated, right, that was enclosed, cramped, where the bathroom didn't have running water or soap, that it's just rife for transmission of COVID. And by and large, what we heard from workers was it was business as usual in those factories, that there weren't really additional safeguards implemented. And unfortunately, we're, now regularly getting calls from members and other workers reporting that they're sick or reporting outbreaks in these factories.
Some of these factories do not have running water.
Yeah, these picture a sweatshop in your mind, and that's what they look like. These are really, our members talk about, working where there are rats and roaches, running through the factory. They come in to rats sitting on top of bundles of fabric. They're running across the piping above their head. There's, one dirty bathroom for, a whole workforce of employees. And, they're just not maintained. So maybe there's no water or there's no soap. It's just not, these are places that are not prioritized. As Francisco said, they are not prioritizing workers' health. That's not what that's not how they're operating. They're operating to sweat labor out of people.
And these are factories that produce clothing for some of the world's major brands, according to the Garment Worker Center, including Forever 21, Ross, TJ Maxx, Nordstrom, Macy's, and Fashion Nova. That is Marissa Nuncio, director of the Garment Worker Center in Los Angeles. We're talking today about California Senate Bill 1399, which would guarantee the state's minimum wage for garment workers. They are currently paid per piece. You are hearing from Francisco, a garment worker in Los Angeles, talking about working 12 hours a day, making $300 per week. Los Angeles has the highest concentration of garment workers in the country. 45,000 people work in this industry. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will get an update on COVID cases, which have reached their highest levels since April. How should we prepare for the months ahead? If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. If you'd like to join today's show, if you have any questions for our guests about the working conditions for garment workers in Los Angeles, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Los Angeles has the highest concentration of garment workers in the country. More than 45,000 people work 10 to 12 hours a day, make as little as $150 a week. Today, California senators are voting on a bill that would guarantee the state's minimum wage for garment workers. And we're joined by Marissa Nuncio, director of the Garment Worker Center in LA, and Francisco is a garment worker in Los Angeles making $300 a week for 12-hour workdays. Marissa, can you tell us about just how this all works behind the scenes? Because as I mentioned, we reached out to the major brands, Forever 21, Ross, TJ Maxx, Nordstrom, Macy's, Fashion Nova, Urban Outfitters. Fashion Nova got back to us and said, Fashion Nova does not pay any garment workers directly or control how their employers pay them. And then Ross wrote back saying, we are unable to comment on questions about specific vendors. If you send us information, we will have our compliance team look into it.
Yeah, you know, those are not uncommon responses by major fashion brands. In fact, we've led a campaign against Ross for about 3 years for really egregious wage theft found in their supply chain. And where workers were owed over $800,000 in wages and penalties, they did not respond appropriately and remedy the situation. The way it works is this, you know, fashion brands sit at the top of a supply chain and they contract out their work. They contract out the production of their garments. What we have found in collaboration with labor enforcement agencies like the Department of Labor, and what we know just through our membership and our legal clinic that brings forward wage claims, is that big fashion brands, they're paying too low for their garment orders to enable the contractors down the supply chain to comply with minimum wage and overtime. They're just not accounting for the true cost of labor in what they're offering to pay for their garment production. And now the other factor operating here is that there are many, this is a industry in which this is really based on competition. There's a lot of competition for a great contract with Fashion Nova, with, you know, Ross. And that puts a lot of control in the hands of the fashion brands to offer what they want to offer, and to bargain down, the price for a garment order. And that's an issue. That is a problem, is that the corporate actors that have so much control in this industry that are actually dictating wages down the supply chain actually have no legal liability for that. And that's just unacceptable. If they're creating the problem and profiting off of that business model, they should also be responsible for the problems that they create in the supply chain, like unpaid wages. And that's what our bill is aiming to get at. It's simply aiming to see that workers are guaranteed a minimum wage, and that all actors along the supply chain are responsible for those wages. It just won't work. We can't see fairness and justice and proper wages in this industry if the key actor in the industry doesn't have any responsibility for those wages. That was actually the intent of a law passed 20 years ago called AB 633, the Garment Worker Protection Act. That was the intent. As sometimes happens with law, implementation and enforcement looks different after a law is passed. And what happened is that fashion brands place so many layers of subcontracting between them and the workers to essentially buffer themselves from responsibility and as you said, sort of wash their hands of responsibility. So what we're trying to do is come back and say, it's been 20 years. The intent of this law did not come to fruition because fashion brands very intentionally took measures to thwart the intention of the law. And we're going to come back and clarify and say that you, fashion brands, are just as responsible as other actors in the industry for the wages of the workers that are producing your clothing.
The New York Times had a piece last year about Fashion Nova. This is a brand in L.A. Investigations conducted from 2016 to 2019, the U.S. Labor Department found that Fashion Nova's clothing was made in dozens of factories that owed almost $4 million in back wages to hundreds of workers. According to the New York Times, the Labor Department has collected millions in back wages and penalties from LA garment businesses, but has not fined a retailer. Francisco, are you always paid what you earn, even though it's so little in pieces, or have you had to fight for your wages?
Sometimes I did. Sometimes I, well, I just want to be clear on this. It's not only Fashion Nova. Yes, that's the one, the first one came up to my mind. There are several small brands, if not all of them, because I have been working for many labels, and what Fashion Nova complains, I think, what comes to my mind is that I can say that the contractors are making a lot more money. Maybe the companies are paying them very well, and we don't know. So they pay us whatever they want us to. So that's why I just want to remark that.
Francisco, do you get time off? Do you get any benefits with your job?
Just like I said, there is nothing at all. There is no benefits, no health insurance. I mean, it's...
Uh-oh. Did we lose? I think we lost Francisco. We'll try to reconnect with him. Marissa, these workers, they don't receive any benefits at all?
No, that's just not happening in garment production. Folks don't have health insurance. Folks are not receiving vacation, paid vacation. Even legally mandated benefits like paid sick leave are being ignored and not offered. Yeah, what workers are earning is by the piece. They're pretty much only earning according to what they sell, how many pieces they can sew a day or how many pieces they can work on a day, and that's really it.
Last week, we talked briefly about how this is legal. Can you expand on that a bit?
On the piece rate, well, what the current law says is that you have to pay the minimum wage. But it does allow a piece rate to be paid legally if the employer is guaranteeing the difference, essentially, topping off whatever a worker earns, according to their piece rate. If there's, $6 less difference to earn the minimum wage, the employer is supposed to pay that difference. Unfortunately, that's just not happening. That piece of the law is just ignored by employers, and workers are only earning according to how many pieces they work on. As organizers and advocates in this industry for 20 years, what we've learned is that this is just an unworkable system of payment. It will always keep the minimum wage out of reach because piece rates are not rising. they're not rising. As minimum wage goes up, piece rates are not rising. Our members tell us that they are stagnant. They've seen the same piece rates for at least a decade. And so it's really upon them to sort of try really hard to sow more and, you know, get closer to the minimum wage. The employers are not taking responsibility for that. And so, you know, in many, many discussions with our members and legal advocates that work on wage claims with garment workers, we realize this is an unworkable system. We need to just basically streamline and simplify the pay system in the garment industry and just keep it to one legal hourly wage. There's no reason to put so much sort of ambiguity in this payment system. Workers tell us that, you know, I don't know what I'm going to earn at the end of the week because, you know, the piece rates are not... they're not in my control. The employer decides, and they could change them in the middle of the week. The employer can see that a worker is skilled and seasoned and sewing really well and fast and lower the piece rates. And so workers often tell us, yeah, you know, I just started a new job and, you know, we'll see what it looks like in a few weeks, you know, and that's sort of imagine that to just sort of put in all this labor and not know what you're going to earn, really, that it's just sort of at the whim of the other actors in the industry. And so, you know, that's what we're trying to get at with this bill. Let's just guarantee the minimum wage for workers. Let's do away with a system that is just really wholly unregulated and unworkable. Keep it simple to one minimum wage. And then, of course, let's hold all actors accountable for unpaid wages.
We have an email from Patricia. She says, what about the union ILGWU?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a great and beautiful history of unionization in the garment industry. And the ILGWU is the heart of that. Unfortunately, we began to see a decline in unionization starting around the 70s, you know, as offshoring and overseas production increased. And really as, you know, for a variety of reasons, as, you know, labor rights, you know, came under attack and union rights are sort of constantly under attack. And then when you have an industry that's as global as this one and really able to sort of, you know, move wherever, you know, the owner of a company wants to take their business in the world, it can make unionization very difficult. So at this time, we really have very little union density in the garment industry, you know, anymore. And the Garment Worker Center, you know, our mission is to organize workers nonetheless, to say, you know, workers continue to, you know, we know that workers have a voice, workers have power collectively, and to be creative and strategic about how we leverage that community power. So, you know, there's unions and there are worker centers throughout the country and those non-union industries. And so we're one of those, and that's the model that we operate under.
Patricia also asks, who owns the subcontractors? Are they all based in the United States or are some overseas?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, what we're talking about are local manufacturers and contractors. They are businesses that mostly are in Los Angeles, that they form a real sort of centralized hub for U.S. garment production. And so fashion brands typically have some of their production overseas and some of their production in the U.S. And what we know is that fashion brands choose to have production in the U.S. because they can't wait for all of their product to come from overseas. They need to respond to fashion demands and fashion styles that are changing and their consumers who want new styles on the shelves quickly. And that's the reason that they keep domestic production. They keep it here. We also, you know, Los Angeles is home to, you know, just a skilled, trained workforce. And so that infrastructure is here for those manufacturers, There's also proximity to the port, right, of Los Angeles. So it's just, it's a place where the infrastructure exists for that type of domestic garment production.
Well, thank you for the email, Patricia. The Garment Center reports that the 13 retailers with the worst labor violations include Ross, TJ Maxx, Nordstrom, Macy's, Fashion Nova, Urban Outfitters. We wrote to all of them and asked them to join the show. We also asked them about wages, why they're so low, and only Fashion Nova and Ross responded with very generic statements. We're also joined today by Francisco, who's a garment worker in Los Angeles, working up to 12-hour days, making $300 a week. Are you back with us, Francisco?
Yes, I'm sorry. I lost for a while, but I'm here.
And okay,
I just
great.
I would like to answer your question when you ask me if we have any benefits from the clothing factories. Well, I can tell you that most of the clothing factories, they don't give us anything at all. We don't have any benefits at all.
Francisco, how would your life and your coworkers' lives change if California does pass this bill that gives you the right to a minimum wage?
And that will change a lot, and that will help us. That will help us a lot because, you know, things in Los Angeles are getting very expensive. Rent, the food. You know, I don't know how familiar. I just want to tell the audience that the in the area of Los Angeles, the price of food, it's like it's getting really, really expensive, and with the salaries I'm paying, are really difficult to survive, and not to mention the rent. I just mentioned to you that I was. I had a problem with the COVID-19, and when I was released from the hospital, my friends they did not accept me at the apartment where I was living at. So I had this really difficult situation that I started to look for rent, and it's very expensive. And a person working in a clothing factory is not able to pay for it, just you know, for a room. So it's kind of complicated. That's why I just want to tell you that.
What other changes would you like to see, Francisco, in terms of better wages and better working conditions?
Well, there is one thing that is very important for me to let you guys know, to let the people know, the authorities or the people who are taking care of the, especially the Labor Commission, they should supervise, you know, more frequently these places and try to provide the most of the owners, the contractors, some kind of you know, of education, something that how to treat people, because most of these people don't know how to treat people, and they treat us like, you know, like not like human beings, and it's difficult to say how these people are treated, and especially the managers. Some of the managers, you know, they treat people really bad, and that is something that I would like to change. That is something that I would. If there is a program where those people can go to and try to learn about, you know, how to treat a human being.
Yeah, Marissa, we hear the same thing from the farm workers. Mm-hmm. The meatpacking workers, the same stories.
Yeah,
that there's intimidation, and just the workers feel like there's just not basic human dignity in the workplace.
I think that's absolutely true, and you know, horribly wrong and unacceptable. You know, we hear these stories all the time. You know, workers know what their wage rights are. They want to demand and see their wage rights respected, but also when we sit down with a worker, when we do an intake for a wage claim, when we meet a new member at the center, they always tell us about the just how intense and how real it is to be treated with such so little dignity, to be humiliated, to have to go into a workplace and experience verbal abuse every day, to be yelled at to work faster, to have their bathroom visits monitored for how many minutes they're spending there, to have bundles of clothing that they're supposed to sell thrown at them. We've had members come and report physical violence, being hit when they've complained about their condition. We have women who report sexual harassment. The emotional trauma that is happening along with the wage theft is really, really just egregious, and something that, you know, always just moves me to see the workers' resilience and continuing to fight in this industry to improve it.
We had an email from a listener who wrote after last week's show, and I just want to read this. Francisco, I think that you'll find this very interesting. Mel writes in, "It made my blood boil hearing your program this morning. To hear about the circumstances of garment workers in LA took me aback to realize nothing has changed in 60 years. I am reminded of my childhood in the 50s in San Francisco. My mother was a garment worker in San Francisco. She used to get to work in the morning, and after we finished our second round of Chinese school at 7, we would head home. You could hear all the shops and worked into the evening, as evidenced by the sound of the sewing machines. After dinner, my mom would resume work at home. The reason? Because she and her cohorts were paid by the piece. The weekends were the same. In hindsight, I realized the uselessness of the union. They had an inspector who came in to inspect the time cards to see that they had worked only 8 hours. The reality was the workers recorded their time and kept working into the evening because they were paid by the piece. We all assumed the problem went away and the work dried up and went overseas. I am shocked to hear that this is still going on in the Los Angeles area. I am appalled that nothing has changed in all of this time." So, Francisco, we got this email after we talked about this issue on last week's show. Francisco, did we lose you again?
Oh, yes, I'm here, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Would you like to comment on that email? And Marissa, would you like to comment on that?
Well, I would like to, but just want to be honest with you, I don't have much time. If you don't mind, I have to leave.
Okay, that's fine. I know we kept you longer.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for your support, for your interest in our stories. Like I have told some other medians, this is not my story. This is a story of thousands and thousands of people who are not able to speak up because they are afraid of being intimidated by the specifically by the owners, by the contractors here in all around Los Angeles. It is amazing to know, and I was really surprised. I'm going to tell you that again. When I came here in downtown in Los Angeles, I was really surprised that some of these places are worse than a third world country. It is terrible because I've seen so many people suffering and having a so difficult situation with all these contractors. And it might be the contractor's problem. I don't know, because I'm just a sewing machine operator, and I don't know. The companies might tell that we are paying the contractors very well, and that is their problem. So that is something that, the authorities our responsibility to investigate and, to change, to make things change. And that's what we are expecting from this new bill that we hope it could pass. And we hope that the senators and the Congress, congressmen and ladies are working hard for this, and as well as the Garment Worker Center for doing, their efforts to support thousands of workers in the garment industry in Los Angeles. I just want to appreciate for the time that you provided in your program, and thank you to your audience. So I don't know if you really understand what I say, but my English is not that good, but I try to make myself understood.
No, Francisco, we heard you loud and clear, and thank you so much for sharing your story, and thank you for joining us.
Okay, thank you to you.
Thank you so much. That is Francisco, a garment worker in Los Angeles, working 12 hours a day, and he makes $300 a week. Final thoughts, Marissa? We've got about a minute left.
Yeah, I think hearing Francisco's story, I'm really glad that he had the opportunity to share with your audience. I think our message is that, yes, this industry needs a lot of work. It is rife with abuses, but it's important that your audience hear workers are fighting back. Workers brought this bill forward, and, had it not been for the pandemic, they would be filling the balcony floor, during the Senate vote. It's just so, though there is a mountain of problems to tackle, I think it's also important that we feel hopeful and inspired by workers' power and what they're doing collectively to transform their industry. They're saying to the powerful forces in the industry, we won't have our dignity ignored, we won't have our labor taken advantage of, and this bill is one really powerful way that they're fighting back, and I'm just so proud and honored to be able to work alongside them.
Marissa Nuncio is director of the Garment Worker Center in Los Angeles. Thank you so much for joining us again, Marissa.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
And the Senate vote is today in California. It would guarantee the state's minimum wage for garment workers, which is about to go up to $15 an hour. We will keep an eye on this, and then we will update you in the coming days. Actually, we'll update you on tomorrow's show because the vote is happening. Again, 45,000 people, mostly immigrant women, work 10 to 12 hours a day and make as little as $150 a week, according to the Garment Worker Center. Los Angeles has the highest concentration of garment workers in the country. You can find out more about the bill and their work at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance and Damian Miner for keeping our studio running. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.